Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investors Council of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisors of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property, finance and money management. Hello, mate. How are you?
G'day, mate. How are you going? It's footy season.
Mate, my team, the thing about living in Melbourne when you follow a Perth team is if you're lucky enough to get a mention in the press, it's not very positive, Ben. So rumour has it Fremantle is going to come last.
This year?
Champion data stats had us as 17. Had Carlton as last, but doesn't suit my pity party.
No, I think you're gonna be improving.
Mate, we are going to be the surprise packet this
year. Well, you know, I can't wait for my Diginot. That's all I'll say, bro.
Here we go. Here's for the Perth listeners, Ben. I'll guarantee them one thing.
What's that?
We will finish higher than West Coast this year.
Ooh,
guaranteed.
Guaranteed. You've heard it here.
What's the date? The 20. What is the date today? It is the 22th.
So what?
Oh, we heard Ivers. There we go. In the background. She got that one. She likes your jokes.
All right. So just quickly off the top five. I don't know. Top eight. Just
Melbourne.
Top
five. Melbourne. GWS. You know who will make the eight this year? Essendon will make the eight this year.
Ooh. Okay. Who drops out?
Sydney.
Ooh. Rightio. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And who else will drop out? Well, Port Adelaide will be in.
Oh, gee, there's going to be a few that fall.
Yeah, well, Collingwood, Fremantle will finish higher than Collingwood.
Oh, there's a call.
Put that in the bank.
Put that in the bank.
So, mate.
We'll have a little wager on that.
I bet the female listeners who don't like sport, the non-Victorians who don't give a bit of AFL, they're excited that we're talking footy
well,
again.
Well, I think the one that's going to struggle is actually the Cats. So I'm throwing it out there.
I was just choked on a coffee. She's a cat.
I know. I just think, you know, they've been to a few preliminaries. It's hard to get part. I just think.
No depth.
I know the God's son has turned back up. But, yeah, I think they don't go deep after 12, 13.
They want GWS's hamstrings. Gold Coast's hamstrings.
My tip for winners, GWS this year for me. I'll take the chocolates.
All right. GWS Melbourne Grand Final, there you go.
Oh, no, I don't think Melbourne will be it.
Let's see.
Hey, there we go. What have we got today?
Well, we did a Facebook Live this week, Ben.
We did.
If you haven't checked that out,
Go
and check that out. And we also did a webinar, which was really cool. Mate, there is such a bounty of information, of questions that came that we couldn't answer in the webinar.
Yes.
So we're going to use today's opportunity.
Yeah, while they're fresh in those people's minds.
To answer, because I think our community will get benefit from it.
Q&A, brilliant.
All right, mate, before we get into those questions, I've got a lot a Mindset Minute today, and it's got a little bit of length to it, Ben, but I want you to hang in there because it's got a powerful message.
I love this segment, bro.
I do know that you love it, Ben. Now, I read this article, and it really sung to me, right?
All right.
And I think it might sing to our audience because it's around what, you know, we're talking about building wealth, we're talking about creating passive income. Here's some insights into what you may want to consider while you're doing and this is the name of the article, Ben, why you should spend your money on experiences, not things. And
shout out the author.
That's Travis Bradbury.
Yep.
You've given me a job because now I've got to find the link to the thing to send it to the stick.
But you'll have that in your Evernote, won't you?
I do have it in Evernote.
There you go. It won't be hard for you.
With a tag of Mindset Minute, so it'll be easy to find.
Beautiful.
All right, so the paradox of possession. It's been a 20-year study conducted by Dr. Thomas Gilovich, a psychology professor, reached a powerful and straightforward conclusion. Don't spend your money on things. The trouble with things is that the happiness they provide, Ben, fades quickly. And there are three critical reasons for this, and I want to read those out. Number one, we get used to new possessions. So what once seemed novel and exciting quickly becomes the new norm.
Mm-hmm.
Like that Collingwood membership, Ben, you're excited.
And then
you realise they don't win any games. It soon becomes... Number two, we keep raising the bar. New purchases lead to what? New expectations. As soon as we get used to a new possession, what do? We look for an even better one, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
So first one, we get used to them. Second one, we keep raising the bar. Third, here we go. The Joneses are always lurking nearby, Ben. Possessions by their nature foster comparisons. We buy a new car and we're thrilled with it, Ibis, until what? A friend buys a better one. And then there's always someone with a better one, Ibis. So one of the enemies of happiness is adaptation, Ben. So it goes on to say, the paradox of possessions is that we assume that the happiness we get from buying something will last as long as the thing itself, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And this is proved to be through this study not to be true.
Yes.
So what's the power of experiences? One, experiences are fleeting, which they say is a good thing. Yep. Have you ever bought something that wasn't nearly as cool as you thought it would be? Once you buy it, it's right there in your face, reminding you of your disappointment. Again, if we reference back to your Collingwood membership, Ben. And even if a purchase does not meet your expectations, buyer's remorse can set in. Sure, it's cool, but it probably wasn't worth the money. We don't do that with experiences. The very fact that they last for only a short time is part of what makes us value them so much, Ben. And that value tends to increase as time passes. So if we bring this all together, Ben, because there's a couple of things here. Experiences become part of our identity. We are not our possessions, but we are the accumulation of everything we've seen.
Yep.
So buying an Apple Watch isn't going to change who you are, but taking a break from work to hike the Kokoda Trail from start to finish certainly will be. So that's one thing. Two, comparisons matter little. We don't compare experiences in the same way that we compare things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not the same. Three, anticipation matters, Ben. So, Ivis, you're going away in a couple of weeks. How's the anticipation been in the lead up to that? Don't answer that because we've been working you to the bone. But anticipation. It's also found that anticipation of experiences causes excitement and enjoyment, while anticipation of obtaining a possession can cause impatience, Ben. So, what does all this mean? We need to have what this person, Elizabeth Dunn, says is puddles of pleasure. In other words, the kind of happiness evaporates quickly and leaves us wanting more. Things may last longer than experiences, but the memories that linger are what matter most.
They are true.
Hey?
What have we've always said, money will not buy you happiness, but if you can use that money that will buy you time, buy you freedom for choice, and you can build out experiences, absolutely true. So I'm going to flip that then and say, so the Collingwood membership price, when I see,
you got anticipation?
When I see Penders sell a dummy, balk one, go through, kick from 50 on the left, just sail through. That's an experience. That's priceless for me.
Two words for you, mate.
What's that?
Good memory. When was the last time that happened?
Well, last year against Hawthorne, to be exactly, when he dodged and weaved, put it on the left and he gave one over to Jamie Allen. So all of those things, it's important to understand that that's it.
The anticipation. The footy season starts tonight. The anticipation for the last few weeks has been brilliant. It's an experience.
This is an economist who did this research, and it has been proven in several of these types of studies that having an abundance of things will not create the happiness. It's the experiences around those things that you can do. So, just recently renovated a house, as you know, Bruce. I have an outdoor area there with a pool, and that to me
is not a pool, mate.
That's a pool.
That's just a
pool.
A lake.
That's not a lake. It's just a pool. It's not. No, it's not.
Anyway,
we're moving on from the point I'm trying to make here. We don't worry about the size of the pool. Is the memories that we're going to be able to create in that space.
Mm.
So that's the important piece for us in terms of a Jay and a me and the boys coming over for a swim. So that's always good.
Let us know what you think about that Mindset Minute, folks. Do you prefer things or do you prefer experiences? Go onto the Facebook. Let us know. We want to hear from you.
Now, before we get, are we about to start Q&A?
Well, we are, yeah.
Well, no, because I'm interrupting this special program with a bulletin. We have a special announcement to make.
Do we? What are we doing?
We do. Well, I'm announcing today that you have been selected as a new host of a brand new television show.
Is that true?
Is that true, Bryce?
It actually is true.
It is
Ben.
Very true.
Yes.
And I'm here to announce, with a little drum roll, that there is a new show.
There is.
Coming on the ABC.
Yep.
Called Escape from the City.
Yep.
And you are one of the brand new hosts of that
I
show,
am,
Bryce.
Ben,
so congratulations.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I am one of five hosts. I'm very excited. Yeah, where's your stream?
Oh, it should have been better than that. Like, I need to be... Uh-oh. Hopefully the show goes better than tomorrow.
Streamer. Now that's the Collingwood streamer right there, isn't it?
Is that a bit of use? I think maybe I need to get another one.
Need another one. No, thank you, mate. That's brilliant. It's exciting.
Yeah, it is very exciting.
I haven't been on the television horse for a few years now, so we've been doing some cool stuff.
We've been in the loop. You've been in the loop of, you know, the reruns of Location Australia. So
yeah, but not everyone has Foxtel, Ben. So most people don't have it. You know, 1 in 11 people have Foxtel.
So you're over to Auntie.
Going to Auntie.
And now, what can we tell about the show? I mean, what are we allowed to say about it?
Well, do you know, in the UK, Ben, they've had a show that's been running for 23 seasons. Some people who listen to this might be familiar. It's called Escape to the Country.
Oh, yes, I know it. It's on 7.2 sometimes. I see it on 7.2 there a bit.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, very good.
So we're making the Aussie version of Escape to the Country.
Wow.
And we're calling it Escape from the City, Ben. Yeah. And it's going to be terrific. I'm going to travel around this country helping people escape from the big smoke, Ben, and go and find a quieter life by the sea, by the bush, the rolling hills of Tasmania, the beautiful climbs of the Sunshine Coast, down maybe Margaret River back home in Perth, Ben. So,
and the mighty Murray River along there. Beautiful, mate. Well, that's exciting. So congratulations.
Thank you, sir. It's wonderfully exciting. It means that we've got a fair bit to juggle this year.
Yes, we've got a few weeks away here and there doing your filming. And look, we don't know the full schedule, so we'll keep you updated.
Well, the good news is if anyone wants to watch Ben, it's on the national broadcaster. It's free to air.
Yep.
Everyone can check it out.
And they've announced today who those five other hosts are.
Yep. So we'll put that in socials. If anyone's interested, they can go and have a look on our Facebook page. And we'll show them who those other hosts are. But it's terrific. Thank you. And also, Ben, if any of our listeners wants to have the opportunity to work with me, they're thinking of escaping from the city themselves, they can go to our Facebook page and I'll have a link there so that they can click on and apply if they want to be on the show, Ben.
So congratulations.
Thank you, sir. Today we're going to talk about Q&A. And as I hinted at the top, we had a webinar last night. It was heaps of fun.
Heaps of fun.
But there was some residual questions because we've got heaps of questions. We couldn't answer them all. So we thought, why not use those questions as something that we're going to chat about today? So,
700 people registered for the podcast prize.
And,
How about the webinar
as well.
So, yes, a lot of people along. So, just great that we could pass on some further knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. So, here we go, Ben. And here's something we haven't done, Ben. I've actually got 7 questions here.
Okay.
And the question is, will we get past number 3? So let's give it a go. But these questions were largely directed for planning side, Ben,
building a property investment plan.
Which was your backyard. So let's go. He's got a question here from Mark. I have a PPR mortgage at the moment, principal place of residence, as does my girlfriend. We wish in the future to turn both into investment properties and buy a further property to live in long term. Should we be spending money doing any works to the properties that we currently live in? Or should we spend the bare minimum and save every cent for our house together?
So there's a couple of pieces to this. I mean, ultimately what we're going to do is look to be able to build up a deposit. So I like the idea of combining and building up savings and money in your offset account. Okay, that's sort of tip number one. Now, in the event that we would look at those properties and we see that there could be some cosmetic renovations that we could do, which could also then attract a higher rent once we move out of those properties and also revalue the property where we could release that equity for their family home, that's terrific. Some of the things we don't know about this is what sort of is their passion about the value of that new family home? Will we be able to retain both of those properties? They're the types of questions that would come out with a further deeper dive into their individual circumstances. And that's why we're talking generally here. I love the idea of offsets against both of them. I love the idea of really focusing in on paying down or spending less discretionary. I like the idea if there's going to be $1 for at least 2 return to potentially put some cosmetic in there. I'd be talking to property managers around how much more that would improve my rental return. All of those things are all part of that story.
There's some foundational stuff here that we've talked about, but it can crystallise in this question, isn't it, Ben? Because they've got a principal place of residence mortgage at the moment. They want to turn into investment property. So the idea for this is it's more important than ever if you have that, in our opinion, is that you do what you said, have interest only lending with an offset account, because you can still be retiring out the debt via that offset facility.
Correct.
But once you want to move into your own principal place of residence, it doesn't matter what the where the loan is secured against. It's actually the purpose of the loan. So if people can pull that money out of offset and bring it over to their the new principal place of residence that they want to buy together, they can dump that into the offset. But they talked here about the bare minimum, Ben. Should they pay the bare minimum and save for it? Well, the question is, if you've adopted what we're suggesting and you can park some cash into your offset account, the question is, for me, bare minimum is, well, if you can actually spend a dollar and turn it into two or $2.50, mm-hmm. or if you're very clever, $3, Ben, in terms of adding value, well, then that's something that you might want to do in the run-up to buying this house together. But there's a few moving parts, but there's some real fundamentals there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's some good stuff in there. And coming back to your point around the offset with interest only, so we're not paying down the loan, we're saving on the interest cost. So it's important to understand we're saving on that interest cost, because the reality is our principal home, our new home together, will be paid with after-tax dollars. Okay, so there's no deductibility around that particular property, so it's important to understand that. So if we were to get some deductions and we want to pay down our owner-occupied first, then you would have P&I on your family home if you thought that that was valuable to you.
Ben, so there's a segue question from that. It comes from Lordy. I thought they changed the PPR loans and didn't allow interest-only loans anymore. How can this be done? So it's a good, good leading question.
So the answer to that is absolutely not. So they wanted to reduce the amount of interest-only lending being distributed. So at one point there, interest-only loans were quite high, in the 40% range. They put a cap on that they can't be more than a certain percentage. And we've seen them dramatically drop down. I mean, some lenders now for new lending is around 10 to 15%. So from that point of view, certainly on principal place of residence and so forth, you can still do interest only, but you are going to be charged slightly higher. So the banks are profiling that based on APRA and Basel III in terms of being higher risk for the funding that they're securing offshore to lend to other people. So the reality is you're going to be paying a little bit more for that. Now, I would debate that as bunkum, but I'm only one person. The reality is, always make sure your mortgage broker is doing a pricing request to try and get the very, very best lending, but you can do interest-only lending against your principal home.
So, Lordy, rough rule of thumb, if you're going up to 80%, usually without too many barriers for interest-only, as soon as you're going over 80%, there are some restrictions depending on the lender and depending on your profile. But so the answer is it hasn't been totally removed. No. They have played around. They've tinkered around on the edges of that, but it hasn't been removed.
And there's been some adjustments on that recently as well, where you're starting to see some interest-only lending come up to 90% for some lenders. So this is the whole idea about why you would use an investment-savvy mortgage broker who has multiple lenders on their panel and literally thousands of loan options for you to get out there and shop around for you and do the hard legwork.
All right, Ben, so let's go on to another sort of related question as we get all these segues. This is from Dean. Hi, guys. My question is, can you use equity in your investment property to wipe out your principal place of residence mortgage? Cheers, Dean. I'll have a go at that. The answer, and you're the mortgage broker, so you come and tidy up the edges, but the answer is you can do it. This is a common question. So people say, if I secure against an investment property and then pay off a non-tax deductible debt like a principal place of residence, can I do it? The answer is you can do it, Ben. But the tax department looks under and they go, what was the purpose of the loan? And if you secure against your investment properties to use a loan to pay off a private non-tax deductible debt, the tax office just goes, I see what's going on under here. The purpose of the loan wasn't for investment. It was actually for a private purpose. Therefore, we will not allow the interest to be deductible. So to answer the question, you can do it, but it's not going to give you any benefit.
No. Effectively, you're going to have the same debt and it's still going to be in the same position where it is effectively non-deductible debt. The other classic one that people do here, Bryce, is they release equity from their investment properties or their family home or whatever it may be, and then turn that into an investment property and then say, oh, no, that property is an investment property now and I release the equity out of that to put a deposit down for my new upsized family home. Surely I can claim that because it's against that investment property. No, purpose of funds test in terms of what it does, that money is still non-deductible. So be very careful. People just think that they can pay loans down and then release the money against all their, and that's going to be deductible. Not true.
Love it. Ben, beware of pollution. So this is often something that people don't think about. So, for example, let's say you do everything by the book.
Yeah.
You set up a loan. It's for investment purposes only. You've got a redraw facility, Ben. And what happens is you think, well, with that redraw facility, I'm going to put all of my income into the redraw facility. And for 5 days, I'm going to have all the interest benefits of that. And then on a Thursday, I'm going to pull my cash out and pay for the groceries. Problem. The pulling out of the money just changed the purpose of the loan.
Mm-hmm.
You have just fully polluted that loan. So it was initially set up with an intent for investment. And the fact that you parked some money there and pulled it out for the groceries at the end of the week, Ben, you have just polluted the loan. You've just made that loan very complicated, which is why an offset facility is cleaner and avoids the pollution over a redraw facility.
And the other, while we're at it, Bryce, and we've talked about this before, the other great pollution killer, or the interest deductible killer, is lines of credit. I get a $100,000 line of credit, I use $80,000 for investment purposes and $20,000 to buy a car.
Ooh, I, like
I then I then yeah. start paying off that car, thinking that I'm paying off that portion that I took out for the car. Tax office don't see it that way at all. The first $20,000 that you put in there is actually paying off the $80,000 investment debt. So this is another example of where an investment savvy mortgage broker will separate out potentially a small amount for personal use and separate that in a different loan split for investment use. You can have multiple splits. It obviously requires a little bit more understanding and management, but ultimately it's as simple as using your money smarts. Everything goes into that primary account. Doesn't matter if you've got 100 loans under that. If one of those loans is for personal use, you've obviously got to pay that off, but it'll be drawing that money from the primary account, exactly like all of the rental income you've got coming from all your properties will be going into that primary account. So there's one central transactional account in which all of that money is going to be serviced from.
Don't pollute, Ben.
Don't pollute, Bryce.
I've just seen another one here that's related. This one's from Chris. I understand the concept of tapping into property one's equity, but how do we do it? Is a line of credit an appropriate method? Hence the segue.
Yep.
Is this with the same bank or a different bank? Thanks, guys. Appreciate the help.
Okay, so the first thing we understand is that the security in which the bank is lending money against in the event that you can't pay that loan off, they obviously have the security, which is their effectively guarantee and comfort in lending you that money at the cheap rate that they do. You can't have a different lender on that same property. There are small exemptions around army personnel and so forth where they'll accept a second mortgage against that property. But the fundamental elements are that security has one primary lender. That lender doesn't want to have anyone in the queue for them to get their money back. They want to be effectively the number one creditor in the queue in the event that that mortgage can't be paid off. So the first one is, so you can't have, the Commonwealth Bank as the security holder of one bank, and then I go and get a line of credit against that same security with ING. It's rare that it can happen. There are, again, some smaller exemptions. I don't want to confuse
don't
people.
Don't pollute the conversation.
Yeah, I won't pollute the conversation. We mentioned that before. But that's effectively what's happening. So you've got to go back to that lender. Now, whether you go line of credit, now lines of credit with a lot of lenders are priced at a little bit of a higher rate because the banks, well, I don't know how they do this, but they argue that it's more, more costly. But I don't buy into that, but that's how they do it. So you can have lines of credit which are a little bit more expensive, or you can have a quasi line of credit which is interest only, okay, with an offset. So it's doing exactly the same thing. So you park the money in it at a cheaper cost of funds, and then you can pull money in and out, because again, it's a bit like a redraw, but it's a free redraw, and internet banking will allow you to do that, so it still operates quite effectively.
So for the benefit of the listeners, Ben, because that's a really, really valuable nugget you just said there, they have an investment facility where they draw down on the loan,
mm-hmm.
and on the same day they park the proceeds of the loan in the offset account,
yep.
so it's not creating any interest.
Yeah, that's
any interest accruing.
Correct. So you,
until they use it.
So it's exactly, and again, come back to the pollution, but be very careful, don't pollute it.
Mm.
Now, the ATO doesn't have as much problem with those types of loans as what they do with lines of credit in the pollution stakes.
Mm.
So the moment, coming back to that line of credit question before, the moment you use any of it for personal use, well, guess what? You can't pay that back until you've paid off all the investment debt first. So that's about, you know, keeping it clean and not breaking the nexus and the purpose of the funds.
So for the clarity for the listeners then, so if they were, say, let's just use a number, they did a $100,000 facility,
yep.
They draw down the funds on settlement day and it goes straight into the offset account. What are the restrictions, if any, on that money under that scenario? You're saying the ATO are clear with that?
Well, when we say they're clear with that, I mean, you've got to seek tax advice, and then we'll stress that again and again and again to get your accountant and your tax advisor to take you through that. So I still wouldn't be polluting the conversation, but what happens in our own household is with variable loans, we can sometimes have different portions for different purposes. So what would then usually happen is your tax advisor will make a record of what portion of that variable loan was for what use. Mm. And then it's a matter of you arguing that point if you're ever audited by the tax. I mean, at the end of the day, we have a self-regulating system. If you do the wrong thing, and you know that you, the tax office come and ask you, can you show me how you've been claiming these tax deductions? And they come back and they see that you've broken the purpose of funds or the nexus of one loan to another. You've got to come up with that, and they might have a different view on that, and you might be charged more tax.
So, folks, if you're trying to find an investment savvy mortgage broker, ask them the question: can you help me avoid pollution? And if they have a glazed look on their face, probably not the one you're looking for.
But also, they've got to work in conjunction with the tax advisor.
Yep.
At the end of the day, no mortgage broker should be giving tax advice. And here, we're not giving advice. We're just sort of saying these are the pitfalls. These are the challenges around that. So no one should be sitting here saying, I heard this, I'm going to action this, without actually seeking independent advice from a tax advisor.
Hey, foundational underneath that discussion, Ben, was cross-security versus standalone. So the good thing is we were talking then about standalone options.
Yes.
But making sure you don't get the wrong standalone option, particularly if you have pollution. So great question, Chris. Thank you for that. Let me quickly get another one for us, Ben, right here. All right, so here's another one from Matt. In the case studies, it shows, and the case studies that
Are our models.
Our book, yep. It shows the debt on investment properties being paid off over time. When do you switch from interest only to principal and interest? Should you refinance after 5 years to extend interest-only period as long as possible, or switch to P&I when your cash flow allows?
That is a magical question, Matt. Mm. And, you know, we talk about case by case. Ideally, there's a few moving things here. If you're in the accumulation phase, and by accumulation phase, I mean you are still looking to add to your portfolio over time, having interest only and understanding the risks of doing that, but you know, by looking at your cash flows, having interest only is what would normally be the way in which you would go, again, based on your risk profile, and you would keep doing that. So your options are that lender may not allow you to go interest only again, but that's 5 years or 3 years or whatever that time period. It's probably not a bad time to revisit to see whether that lender is the most competitive lender at that time. So you could potentially refinance that loan to another lender who may be interested in taking you on board as a risk for interest only whilst you're in the accumulation phase. If you've finished off building your portfolio based on your planning and all of those cash flows that you've run, and now it is about retiring debt, you've also got to be mindful, and we've done a video on this, so we'll put some show notes. We put a link to that video that Joel and I have done in terms of what that looks like, because that's a good example where having control of your money and keeping it interest only for the longer term, meaning you're building up a nice big buffer so you're in control of that cash. Because the reality is if you've got an offset account, or if you, let's say you've got $1 million in mortgages, Bryce, and you have five offset accounts, but the total of those five offset accounts is $1 million.
Boom.
Boom. You're debt free in a sense. But what if you wanted to use a bit of that money for other purposes? And so you're playing around with this, you know, with this equilibrium of where the debt is and where. So you could move all that money from the offset and pay off the loans indefinitely, but that just means your liquidity. You don't have a fallback, you don't have money for emergencies. So it's really important to try and get that balance right. And so in all of our models that we've always built traditionally, before we've seen more pressure being put on interest-only lending, and now with a cost higher of interest-only lending, we have been adjusting for that. And we've been saying to some customers, no, we want to go P&I on this, and that doesn't affect your bigger plan. For some, we're saying, here's the difference between principal and interest only. What do you want us to do?
Mm.
And when we're giving the customer the decision to choose, but not just like, what do you want to do? Well, I can't see the visuals. The most powerful thing of having these forecasts and all of these projections of the cash flows every month for 40 years is that you can make an informed decision because you can actually see what the consequences are. If someone's just going to say, oh, roughly it's going to be this, or, you know, it's not an informed decision. So the good brokers will be able to cash flow model that projection for you.
Good summary, Ben. Let's just take the listeners. Let's rewind 20 years and someone wanted $100,000 passive income. They bought their principal place of residence 20 years ago. They started investing in properties 20 years ago. And they'd arrived now in 2018 with their home fully paid off. And with let's say that they kept that in offset.
Yep.
And then they had $2.5 million today worth of income producing assets, and they had $2.5 million with a related debt.
Yep.
And $2.5 million worth of cash in offset buckets. So effectively, they paid them. There was parity. There was no interest being paid. That person would now be in a position, if that portfolio was giving them 4% yield on their rent, they'd now be in a position to retire on $2,000 a week. That's the essence of the strategy that we've talked about in the book. Fill up the buckets. So, okay, here we are in 2018. We now want to project to 2038. Well, you want the equivalent of, in 20 years' time, of having your home fully paid off. And in today's dollars, $2.5 million worth of income-producing assets outside of the family home, mm-hmm. fully paid off. Now, in 2038, that'll be more, Ben, because the value goes up. But the principle, to crystallise it today, 20 years ago, that's for you to retire today. That's what you would have needed to have done.
And Bryce, that's a nirvana. I'm going to go a little bit more technical now.
Because sometimes you don't always retire out of the debt.
Correct. So the nirvana is to obviously be debt-free. But what if you say you still had $400,000, so you got a $2 million property portfolio, but you still had $400,000 in debt? But what if that $2 million worth of investment assets were producing you? So that $400,000 at 5%, what's that, 20 grand a year in cost to hold that? But your investments are producing you $120,000 a year, right? So all of a sudden, you're still not debt-free, but you've got the money to service that mortgage. So service that debt plus also the surplus, which you'll have to pay tax on, but the surplus will be there as well. And then over time, that gets better and better because we do raise rents over time. And obviously, from that point of view, we should be able to retire that debt out. So what we don't want people to think is, okay, well, at the end of your planning stage, your accumulation stage, you sell all the properties.
No,
you might stage a sale. Some people might have no selling at all. And that's all going to come down to four things, Bryce: income, expenditure, time, and target. They are the critical things that you need to understand when you're doing, you know, they're the levers. They're the levers that we would be playing with. And that's the reality of the situation in terms of, so that's why every case is going to be different. And that's why you need independent advice around your circumstances.
Ben, I haven't said this for a while, but pause, rewind, re-listen to what you just said, because that was absolute gold. People say, what's the end game? Well, you just summarized it beautifully in terms of the hybrid from the nirvana. So pause, rewind, have another listen to that, because it was excellent. I can see why you were the property investment advisor of the year, buddy, over there.
That was a while ago. I don't do a lot of day-to-day work, but I've now got a team of people that I oversee in this space.
Very good. How are we going for time, Ibis? Can we sneak another one in? Yep, so that's always good when she says nod. All right, so we got another question here from Shanky, Ben. Regarding loan structure, can I use the equity from one property to pay the deposit for two separate investment properties? And the last part of the question, is it similar to collateral?
So the answer to that is yes, you can, and you don't have to cross-securitize to do that.
Mm.
In fact, what you could do, depending on how much visibility you want to have on your loan splits, you can have, so let's say, you know, some people in Sydney who might have a lot of equity, let's say they've got $300,000 or $400,000 worth of equity and they want to get that out as a lump sum. They could potentially use that for four properties, subject to them having strong enough income to get the borrowing power to buy all of those properties. Now, some might choose to just have that as one loan split, knowing that it's for, you know, it's a deposit for each of those properties, but others potentially like to split it out to say maybe the 25%. So it's the 25% because the property itself is going to have 80% against it, and that makes up the 105% that they're going to borrow to get that particular property. So the answer to that is yes, you can. And depending on how you want your investment savvy broker to work with you, they will sort of make some recommendations on the different types of ways in which you can structure it. But the fundamental thing is that would be a separate loan structure from your non-deductible home, if it's your home you're releasing it from, and you might split that out again into a couple of extra splits, but that's how it's done.
Because that came from the fact that one of the sins we talked about in the webinar, Ben, was to not cross-securitize your lending. Yes. You've got to do it standalone. So it's a good question. It's a variation. We're still doing standalone, but it's you can see where Shanky was going with that, because it can be confusing that looks like cross-collateralization.
What a lot of lazy brokers and bankers do, okay, is they because it gets a little bit more complex in terms of, okay, in some cases you might have two or three loan splits. Now, it doesn't matter what they're secured against, but there's two or three loan splits, and the purpose of that money might have been for one Smith Street, right? And it doesn't matter that it's come from one Jones Street and one Errol Street and one, you know, Johnson Street. It doesn't matter if there's a split from that. But that just means that property might have three or four loans that you've got to remember the purpose of that money was for that property. Okay, but the lazy ones, the ones who think I don't want to teach my clients how to do this, will just go, let's combine them all together and let's cross securitize them. And it's like, then it's nice and easy for you. So that investment property just has one loan, and that's all you need to worry about. For me, I think you're robbing the customer of flexibility, you're robbing the customer of future potential, you're robbing the customer of getting extra borrowing power.
Pay in LMI.
That's right, if it's global and they go over that 80%. And in some cases, as we're seeing now, some lenders, and I think this is a new bit of gold for those who, is some lenders are servicing, using their servicing calculator based on LVRs. So if you can get that LVR down to 70 or even below 60, their servicing calculators are more relaxed, which means you can borrow more money. So again, if you're in the accumulation phase and you can controlling a bigger asset, then the reality is there's going to be more in your back pocket. Now that always still comes back to the one fundamental thing, and that is the income to support it. Mm-hmm. And not just for today, but into the future. We cannot stress enough that our podcast is not about gung-ho, absolutely, must get out there, must do everything now. It's about sensible, strategic, well-thought-out, tailored money management solutions, and then execution and implementation.
We're not get-rich-quick, Ben. We're get-rich-safe.
We are.
So there you go, folks. Well, some really good questions there, Ben. Obviously, we've tapped into your enormous experience on a lot of those, so I think the listeners will benefit from that. And as I said, we had a wonderful turnout at the webinar last night. So we did go through a lot of finance stuff. So you can see there's a clear theme in all of that, which is terrific. Hey, all right, today, mate, with my life hack.
Yes.
This is Siri, but you can do it with Google Assistant. So for the Android
Google
users.
Google Assist.
Hey, Guru. You are taking me to try.
Another laugh from Ivis. We've heard her voice a couple of times.
So Ben, do you know when you get the stomach rumbles? You're about to hunger pains are kicking in.
Yes.
You know you're desperate at that point, right?
Yeah.
And if it's bad enough, you get hangry and you can't make a decision.
Okay. Hangry.
So Siri, watch this. Ready?
Did you accidentally summon me?
No, I didn't, Siri. But this is what I wanted to do for you. Do you want that in?
Yeah. So get going. So I might have to hit it again though.
Yep.
There we go.
That's what I figured.
Oh, yeah, well, this segment is going beautifully. It's because I keep talking as I press the button. Sorry. All right, let's just...
I'm sorry. Go
ready? On. Silence. Here we go. Ready? Siri, I'm hungry.
I understand eating is the cure for that. Okay, here's what I found.
Oh, and it's got all the little local restaurants.
All the locals in maps, so I can just press, bang, hit the map. Straight away, here I go.
Oh, very good.
So, Ben, no longer do you say, geez, I'm hungry, where can I eat?
Can you try something for me?
Yeah, go on.
You know, question that is. Let's do it again. I'm hungry, but I'm gluten-free. See what you get.
Siri, I'm hungry, but I'm gluten-free.
I don't want you feeling all peckish. Okay, Bryce, here's what I found.
Oh, okay. Well, it's trying hard. There we go.
Well, I can tell you that top response
auction
there.
Rooms,
around the corner from
Melbourne. Here. Yeah.
I can tell you that they can cater for gluten-free. So, maybe there.
Well, good one. I like that one. It was good.
Siri, can you get stuck into Ben for saying that I always eat grass? All right. So there's my life hack today, folks. If you're hungry, give that a go. Let us know. So, did you know?
Did you know, Bryce?
Oh, here we go.
Start of the football season. I just thought we would take a moment to reflect on the history of football. Okay, now everyone's starting to turn off.
Are we talking about since 1990? Because that's the history of
the
AFL.
No, we're talking about the history of the competition. and the full competition. So it's not about numbers of games played.
No, just for clarity,
it's percentages. So I'm working on percentages.
So you're polluting the discussion
here. So I'm working on percentages.
The VFL and the AFL. Okay, just so we're all clear.
I'm working on percentages. So what team,
Because I think I'm going to get lined up here. That's why I'm clarifying.
What team has been the number one winning team throughout the history of AFL football? VFL football.
Oh, so
there we go. Come on.
Well, I don't want to play this game because it's silly, right? Because it's like it's like merging netball with basketball.
No, it's not. It's the same game. It's just bringing more people in. Number one, played. So we played a few more games too, so there's a lot more pressure to win those games. Number one, percentage winning team in the history of the competition just happens to be Collingwood. We've won 60.89%.
Pause. Can I include all the premierships that East Fremantle and South Fremantle have won in this discussion?
If you want to bring next week, if you want to bring the waffle competition to the fore, because that's the only competition we played in.
Just for clarity, the AFL started in 1990, and you're bringing in stuff.
Well, we won the premiership in the first year, so I don't mind. You can bring in 1990 anytime you want it. The point I'm making here is that we have won 1,513 games.
Right.
The only team in history to win 1,500 games. I think that's important to know, right? So with a winning percentage, because that's what this is about, right? So I'd like to see your winning percentage in, you know, your combined. So go and grab your waffle stuff. Bring them East Fremantle, whatever you need to do. Bring them in and see what your winning percentage is.
Does that include all the West Coast premierships too? Because that was full of East Fremantle and South Fremantle players in the first two premierships. Oh, that'll fire up some
whatever.
West Coast.
Whatever. Okay. So we've got the greatest winning margin. Number two, Carlton with a winning margin of 58. Essendon, 56. West Coast, 56. Geelong, 54. Adelaide, 54. Port Adelaide, 51. Richmond, our reigning premiers.
Why don't you go straight to the bottom, Ben? Why don't you go straight to the bottom?
Do you want to go? Because I can't see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
You set this up beautifully.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Wait a minute. Newsflash, 16th. You've played 521 games. You've won 232 of those games with a winning percentage of 44.63.
Yeah.
And that's across home and away and finals, by the way. So we've been marked down because we've got finals in
the GOAT, the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan, didn't even get over 50% of shots made. So we're close to that.
Well, we're 60. So we're going all right. And that's why Collingwood's got such a big base, because most Saturdays and Sundays, we're pretty happy with ourselves because we've had a win. All right. We've won. We're number two in home games. West Coast is number one. You come in number sixth. And number eight. So that's not bad. So when you play at home...
You gave me a bone, did you?
You've got a 58.1%. You've got a 58.1% winning ratio. Mm. Now, away, Collingwood's number one. We win more games away at 54% than any other team in the competition.
This is the biggest stitch-up I've ever heard.
That's great. I've been waiting for this for weeks. All right, Fremantle is unfortunately 16th. So when you play away, you don't travel well. It's like West Coast. You guys don't travel well. You've got a winning margin of 31% when you travel. Now, here's where I'm going to mark Collingwood down, all right? Because this is how balanced I like to be. I like to be balanced, Bryce.
You can see that.
So Collingwood, okay, when it comes to finals, we're not very good. Okay, we have a winning margin.
I don't say the Collie Wobbles for nothing.
We're at 14th.
Yeah.
Okay, 14th with a winning margin of 44.92. So that is we've played 177 finals, which is just streaks ahead of everyone. The nearest team that's played that many finals behind us is actually Essendon in 130. Now, Essendon has a winning margin of 53%. But unfortunately,
Frio still, this is the gift that keeps on giving.
Frio still. You played in 15 finals with a winning percentage of 40. So there's only one team, unfortunately, worse than you guys, and that's the Bulldogs. Unfortunately, in the finals... When it comes to finals, the Bulldogs have a winning percentage of 36%. So they'll obviously improve that, not last year, but the year before.
You know there's no listeners at this point. They switched off about 4 or 5 minutes ago.
So I think that the message here...
There's a message. Okay, good. So there's a point.
There's a message here.
The
moral of the story is Collingwood has been the most successful winning team and has the most successful winning culture in AFL, VFL history.
And the richest dentist in the history of Australian medical... all right, that's
good,
mate.
Go the Pies. Good luck this year for all the teams playing in the AFL/VFL. And I hope Freo do all right. I just hope Collingwood will do better.
Hey, I don't know.
Last thing I want is I don't want Essendon to do well. I don't want Carlton to do well.
And what I'm going to say to the listeners is, on Ben's Did You Know segment, is I'm actually going to text it to Jane, his wife, because she's actually
she's a
Freo supporter. So,
and the entire family, Murray, if you're listening,
I hope next
Gordon,
to that lake that you built, there's a doghouse, mate, because you're about to be in it. So there you go, folks.
Anyway, bring on the footy season.
Bring on the footy season. So I hope your team wins this weekend, and mate, until next week.
Knowledge is empowering, especially if you follow Collingwood.
Slight variation. See you next week.
Bye for now.